and Judge Harris, the Honorable Elizabeth G. Bentley presiding.
Good morning, you may be seated. I'll just take a minute to get... All right, good morning and welcome to the Court of Appeals. For the audio record, today is March 13th, 2025, and today's argument is being live streamed. We will also be making an audio recording. The audio record of today's hearing will be available on the court's website within 24 hours. A reminder that there are no other recordings permitted without the express permission of the Court of Appeals. And today we have four calendars on our calendar this morning. Three of them are oral, will be set for oral argument, and one for a non-oral conference. So with that, we'll hear argument for the first case, which is A24-1577, In Re the Welfare of the Child of DAC. Good morning, counsel. A few quick housekeeping matters. You'll each be given 15 minutes for argument, and then appellant has an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal. And please feel free to adjust the height of the podium using the buttons in the front to the extent that you would like to. And before beginning your argument, please identify yourself and your client for the record. So with that, we'll get started with appellant.
Good morning. My name is Ann Morris Carlson, and I represent appellant mother. May it please the court and counsel, I represent appellant mother DAC. We are asking that this court would reverse the termination of mother's parental rights and remand with instructions to the agency to provide reasonable efforts to reunify the family. This case hinges on reasonable efforts. And my understanding as to why the court was reluctant to, and I am making some assumptions here, but why the court was reluctant to initially alleviate the agency of the responsibility to make reasonable efforts to reunify the family was that the facts that warranted removal were rather thin. We had a child who, by all accounts, had her needs met in the care of her parents. And then at the time that mother was arrested, the child was removed from the home. We had 9 months of demonstrated at least adequate parenting. Granted, we didn't have a lot of information about what was going on. But the initial court did not alleviate the agency of the statutory requirements to provide reasonable efforts, an exercise of due diligence to do all things possible to reunify the family and assess what relevant services might allow the child to safely return to the home. But for the previous termination of parental rights, I don't think that a court would find that the evidence presented at the hearing was sufficient to support the court's finding of reasonable efforts made by the agency. My concern here is reasonable efforts depends on the facts of each case. JH 968 NW2D 593 at 601 Minnesota Court of Appeals 2021. And at trial, the agency did not present evidence that it made reasonable efforts. It's an exercise of due diligence to identify services that would allow the child to return from the home from which she was removed. And the record lacks evidence that mother's case plan was explained to her prior to June, with trial happening August 16th.
So where are you, is it your position that the factual findings then are with respect to that issue as to whether they were explained or that mother knew about the requirements of the case plan, that it was a clearly erroneous finding by the district court?
I am arguing that the district court's finding that the agency made reasonable efforts is not supported by sufficient evidence in this record.
Because there is evidence that testimony that the caseworker had explained, had met with the mom, had explained it, that she had signed at least one of the case plans that were presented, that she had refused offers to make referrals. So are those, when you're saying it's the evidence is insufficient, is it that is not enough for the district court to reach its decision, or do you disagree or find error in those findings?
I do not believe that the evidence supported or the evidence provided was sufficient to support the district court's findings that the efforts were reasonable. My understanding of the evidence that was provided was that the social worker referred mother to a parenting and psychological assessment far too late for mother to actually have an opportunity to complete it. And when one of the agency's concerns is that she has psychological issues, and the case plan, the non-court-ordered case plan, says this particular effort falls to the agency, I think the evidence is insufficient to support the finding that that's reasonable.
Can I ask you about the non-court-ordered part of your argument? So your counterpart points out that, you know, this was filed as as a TPR petition, so it didn't go CHIPS first, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, setting aside the signing issue, and I know there was a couple of different case plans, can you, I guess, walk us through how a court-ordered case plan typically works or should work under the statutes in the TPR petition context for you know, is the court required to order when the case is not CHIPS the case plan? And because the argument, as I understand it, from the county is that there was no court-ordered case plan because there was not an adjudication. So can you let us know what's your response to that?
My concern is that to prove a statutory basis under Minnesota Statute 260C.301, neglect of parental duties, that there is a presumption that a court-ordered case plan is reasonable. The court-ordered case plan serves the purpose of giving mom the roadmap of what she needs to do to have the child returned to her care, and if a court has reviewed it, we know that it's reasonable. And I understand they filed a fast-track TPR and that the jurisdiction would have been on social services without it necessarily being on mother. I'm not asserting that in my brief, but that's a gray area that I could concede. There might be some room for me to understand better. But as far as what, you know, the agency makes these arguments and the court makes these findings, this case plan was reasonable. It wasn't reviewed by the court. It wasn't, on this record, provided to the mother until June when the social worker explained the case plan and got mother's signature. And we don't have evidence of the previous social worker having meetings with mother to explain, here's your roadmap.
Wait, so I just want to drill in to make sure I understand the court-ordered case plan, because my understanding is, you know, JH says a parent's failure to comply with a reasonable case plan may constitute evidence of neglect of parental duty. So I guess I want to be sure, because, you know, if you're right about what I understand you just argued, wouldn't that mean that any time a, you know, county files a TPR petition without a CHIPS adjudication first, where the case plan is court ordered, there would be no way for the county to prove refusal or neglect to comply with parental duties under, you know, the standard that's discussed in JH, which doesn't say court-ordered, it says reasonable.
Failure to satisfy the requirements of a court-ordered case plan provides evidence of a parent's noncompliance with their parental duties in re-child assignment. 662 Northwest 2nd. So that comes from case law.
Is that an exclusive? Like, is that the only way that they can? Because that language wasn't used in JH. You know, so my concern is that are we going to be reading, and what would the implications be in other cases then that are always, you know, that are brought at the TPR without an adjudication where there is a court ordered case plan?
Well, when a case comes in and the district court has the ability to make the prima facie finding that is the agency doesn't have to provide reasonable efforts in this case. And I believe it didn't make that finding here because we really didn't have much evidence to support out-of-home placement. I mean, honestly, I get that she was arrested and that was a bad fact. But we didn't have anything else. And in the scheme of child protection, what you want is a dangerous environment or some sort of current safety concern. There were arguments made at the emergency protective care hearing about what's the current safety concern. We don't have enough information about this family other than mom got arrested, and apparently she has a default TPR. That's enough to say, okay.
And it also included that she had ingested the narcotics at the time of the arrest, right?
Yes. Yes, and that did support the agency's concerns that she struggled with a substance use disorder. And she did complete, the court received evidence that she completed 3 treatment programs, or at least engaged in programming. So I'm sorry, to answer your question, because I feel like I'm getting off track and that's on me.
That was on me. I asked an intervening question.
There are a lot of cases where the court can alleviate the agency of its requirement to make reasonable efforts. And I think that my reasonable efforts concern is more as to we have a statute with case law that helps us identify that for the agency to meet its burden of proving neglect of parental duties, it can do that when the parent has failed to comply with a court-ordered case plan. Or the same statute says, or the district court can alleviate the agency of having to make reasonable efforts.
Well, so just to, for a point of clarification, though, I take your point that that evidence, or failure to comply with a court-ordered plan may be evidence that the court could consider. But is there any case that says a court-ordered plan is required in order to establish? And I think this is just another way of thinking about Judge Eade's question. You know, here we don't have a court-ordered plan, but does that mean the county, that failure to comply with the plan is not something the court could or should have considered? Because reasonable, I guess the standard here is, did the county make reasonable efforts? And is there any case saying that reasonable efforts means it must include a court-ordered plan or else?
There are cases that say that if the agency did not provide a case plan that substantially conforms with Minnesota Statute 260.012, then the efforts by the agency cannot be considered reasonable.
So that kind of goes to then, I guess, my next question, which is, I'm just wondering if the whole conversation about court-ordered plan is kind of distracting from the question of did they make reasonable efforts? Was there a plan? Did she know about the plan?
That's completely fair.
Okay.
And I want to be really clear. It's not that my argument, and perhaps I didn't flesh it out in my brief as well as I have in the months since I wrote it in my mind. It's the totality of the efforts that are unreasonable. It's not just that we didn't get a case plan before the court. It's not just that I'm not sure that the case plan was explained to her. It's not just that she had to figure out whether or not she could do testing at the inpatient treatment facility or have visitation with her child. It's not just that I don't think it was explained to her the color code. And the only evidence I found in the record of the color code being explained to her was like a month or two before trial. And I reviewed this record thoroughly. There wasn't much of a record to review. I mean, it's a pretty thin record to support a termination of parental rights. And where I found that the record was especially thin is what did social services do?
Well, what do you make then of the finding that mom kind of rebuffed efforts by the county to refer to different programs?
There was initial resistance. I agree. She struggles with her trust of the government. And in the beginning, she demonstrated that She was not as anxious to get on board as we often want to see people get, but what I saw here was that as this case moved along, her efforts to work this case plan improved. The request for a continuance shouldn't have come from me. It should have come from the agency because she was the one that was doing the work. There was room for growth, yes, but she made it through. She completed a chemical use assessment. She started inpatient treatment. She left there because she didn't know if she could have visits with her child. And then she did outpatient treatment. We got evidence of that on the eve of trial. I think this is a parent who's demonstrating that she's on her way. And unfortunately, the timelines, I have us on a trial, a fast-track TPR, where I think my sense is that when she didn't show up for trial, the agency was opportunistic about, fine, we'll move forward with a default. And when they did move forward with that default, they did not present sufficient evidence to support the district court's findings or to support the signing judge's order submitted by the agency. The agency failed to meet its burden of proving by clear and convincing evidence that it made reasonable efforts of the provision of services to correct the conditions that led to removal. And these are conditions that I'm not convinced should have led to removal. I'm concerned the conditions that led to removal are not actually warranting a TPR, because we have no allegations of an unsafe environment for the child. And I believe the facts that brought the case in are the reason that the court declined to make that prima facie finding that the agency should be alleviated of having to make reasonable efforts to reunify. Erroneous results ensue when the shield of social services becomes a sword. And the purpose of the rules is to strengthen family ties and remove children only when their safety and welfare cannot otherwise be safeguarded. The presumption of palpable unfitness is supposed to serve the child's interests. The child's interests are paramount. May I finish my sentence?
Yeah, go ahead.
Thank you. The child's interests are a paramount consideration, and the child strongly bonded with a mother whose needs are met for 9 months has an interest, and it is presumed in her interest to be with a natural parent. Using the presumption as an excuse for the agency to make half-hearted efforts to assist the family does not serve the child's interests. It serves the agency's interests. Thank you.
May it please the court. I'm Jennifer Jackson, Assistant Dakota County Attorney, here representing my client, Dakota County Social Services, the respondent in this matter. Appellant indicates that the issue in this case is reasonable efforts. In her argument, she fails to address the presumption of palpable unfitness in this case. The standard in this case, when there is a presumption of a palpable and fit parent, is whether the parent is suitable to be entrusted with the care of the child. The burden of production moves to the parent to prove whether she has addressed the underlying facts and reasons that led to the previous termination of parental rights in this case, and also whether she provided any evidence to rebut that presumption. The mother failed to appear at the termination of parental rights trial. The matter proceeded by default. The mother did not appear. She did not provide any testimony. She did not produce any exhibits.
Counsel, and she was represented by an attorney who had an opportunity to question the social service or the state's or county's witnesses. Why wouldn't that evidence, information elicited from her attorney, why wouldn't that meet the burden of production? That being that her attorney, with the permission of the court, allowed her to question witnesses. She elicited information that, quite frankly, did meet the bare minimum that she was doing items to address what previously led to her previous TPR. Why isn't that sufficient to meet the low burden of production?
There was testimony elicited by cross-examination of appellant's counsel. However, the information that was elicited did not rise to the level of rebutting that presumption.
But counsel, isn't that, again, that's a burden of production, which from my understanding means that you need to just provide some information that rebuts the claim. So if the claim was that she had a previous TPR, and through cross-examination, there's information elicited that she did do chemical dependency, that she was visiting with the children. There was information elicited to contradict the claims made by the county. Given the low burden of production, why isn't that sufficient?
It is a low burden of production. However, the record reflects that the mother, through cross-examination, and it was elicited that the mother did attempt chemical dependency treatment programs, but she never successfully completed any chemical dependency treatment programs. She also was submitting to, or supposed to be submitting to, random urinalysis. She did not submit to those tests. She did indicate at one of her treatment programs that she did indicate in July that she had a use of fentanyl. She admitted to chemical use.
But counsel, that goes to the weighing of the evidence. Again, as it relates to the production, that meaning I'm producing this evidence, which, again, rebuts it. Doesn't the cross-examination, her eliciting that information, isn't that sufficient? Again, not going to then the county gets to come back and say, yes, she rebutted this, but here's all the information that kind of leads to why she's palpably unfit.
Previous cases that this court has ruled on, specifically RVM, 8 Northwest 2nd, 680, which is Minnesota Court of Appeals decision from 2024, was also a case where there was evidence presented and given to the court. There was evidence produced at trial, but it still did not rise to the level of rebutting that presumption.
If we disagree with you that the presumption was rebutted, do you lose? Was there enough in the record to satisfy your burden of persuasion?
For argument's sake, if this court finds that the presumption was rebutted, there is still ample evidence in the record to affirm the district court's order. The reasonable efforts that appellant cites were not given were clearly given in this case. And I do want to point out that there was talk about whether the case plan was ordered in this case. It was not ordered in this case and could not be ordered in this case because there was no adjudication on a child in need of protection or services petition. So the disposition to order a case plan was not available to the court because this was a termination of parental rights petition. The court did not alleviate the agency, despite inconsistent orders, did not alleviate the agency of providing reasonable efforts. Those were given, and what the court did is they approved the case plan. There's a difference between ordering a case plan and approving a case plan. There is case law that says that there is a reasonable case plan if it is approved by the court, and that is...
The three grounds do you think is the strongest, since only one is necessary to affirm for you, which would you say?
Well, the county contends that there was no rebuttal of the palpable unfitness statute. I believe that we can meet our burden on all three. Which one is the strongest? I would indicate that reasonable efforts are needed for each one of these subdivisions that were alleged in the termination of parental rights petition. I believe that reasonable efforts were provided, which I think also shows that mother did, in essence, I do believe that the mother was neglectful of her parental duties. There was a case plan. Although it wasn't ordered, it was approved. It was deemed reasonable. There are findings that the court has made at the district court level that the case plan was approved and that reasonable efforts were being made. There were findings in previous court orders in this matter. I'd also point out that this was a case that was supposed to go straight to termination. The mother had the benefit of time. By the time the child was removed and the time that the termination of parental rights trial occurred, the mother had 9 months. And there were efforts provided by the county. The reason for removal that appellant indicates is mere speculation about whether the county about whether the district court decided to relieve the county of those efforts or not. That's pure speculation about why the court did not relieve the county. However, the county did move forward. There were case plans that were created. And the piece in this case that also has not been mentioned but was briefly touched on was that the mother did rebuff the efforts by Dakota County Social Services. The mother was extremely difficult to get a hold of in this case. The social worker had to show up at the mother's supervised visits in order to communicate with the mother, speak with the mother, go over her case plan. There were three different case plans filed with the court. The mother knew what was required of her.
Don't interrupt. So it sounds like you might be emphasizing the refusal or neglect to comply with the parental duties. Am I right to take it that you think it might be the strongest of the three? Or are you just going through all of them? I'm not trying, and if maybe you can't say, maybe you say that all three of them are strong from your point of view, but I'm just wondering if there's one that you think is a slam dunk for the county.
I'm aware that there is only one that is required for the court to terminate parental rights. However, the county does believe that we can meet the burden on all three of those. With respect to the subdivision on... With respect to... Subdivision 260C301, subdivision 1B2, I do believe that even if the burden is not rebutted, that mother is also palpably unfit. The termination of parental rights that occurred in Wisconsin occurred recently. That termination of parental rights order was signed on April 4th, 2023. This child had already been born at that time, but did not come to social services' attention. This child came to social services' attention when the mother swallowed drugs. The basis for the termination in Wisconsin was also for drug use. The child and the mother both tested positive for drugs upon that child's birth that resided in Wisconsin, which stemmed from that order. The mother has not adequately addressed the reasons for the child that came, the previous child that came to Child Protection Services, and this child. The chemical dependency issues by the mother were the primary concern. There is a case, FKO. It is persuasive but non-precedential. And there's a footnote in that case that indicates that the court may consider the mother's behavior and actions when she is complying or not complying with the case plan. In this case, social services reached out to mother and offered transportation. The mother said she had her own transportation to visits. Social services offered to help her find a treatment program. The mother indicated, I will find my own treatment program. The guardian ad litem also testified during trial that she had difficulty in reaching the mother. The efforts were made. The mother did not avail herself of those efforts. There is ample testimony and exhibits in the court file record that indicate all of the efforts that were made by the agency in this case. The fact that the mother did not appear at the hearing, we did not have the benefit of eliciting testimony from her to see how she has improved her situation and her compliance.
I'm sorry, you cited to FKO and you indicated that that was persuasive. FKO, the court reversed the termination, and in FKO, the basis for the reversal was that the court found that the county did not engage in reasonable efforts and that it was really the county's relationship and the conflict between the county and the mother that led or governed the county's behavior, and that mother's work with the case plan was showing that she was attempting to do what she needed to do. The footnote you're indicating, footnote 7, only goes to the fact that mother was engaging in other issues such as social media posting and things where she was actively poking at the county. It seems to me that FKO really would support mom's position that because she was engaging in her plan, and really it was a timing thing where the county just decided to unilaterally stop, that that was the reason why that was reversed. So how does FKO, and again, I know it's non-precedential, and I'm sure you know I wrote it, so how does that support your position that in any way, quite frankly?
I point out the footnote because I want to make a point that mother's actions contributed to the lack of progress on this case plan.
And by mother's FKO, actions, I'm presuming, and I'm sorry to interrupt, you're mm-hmm. talking about her not contacting the county, not engaging in kind of the treatment, those actions?
Right. The mother did not meet, the mother was not available when the assessment initially started in this case. The mother was unavailable. The assessment worker couldn't even contact the mother. The mother was unavailable. She did not reach out to social services for at least a week. She did not inquire how her child was doing. She did not complete the assessment with the social worker on the investigation phase. And that conduct continued where it was difficult to contact the mother for her to engage. The point of bringing up FKO was based that it is notable that the mother did not engage and work on her case plan because of her own inaction. FKO,
wasn't one
the
of
facts.
The other issues in FKO that the county basically unilaterally determined that it would be futile to make certain referrals, like to family therapy. And what I've been wondering is, why is it reasonable for the county in this situation to have conditioned the mental health, or the maybe it was a parenting assessment referral, on sobriety? Because, you know, one of the things your counterpart points out is that the referral didn't come up until 2 days after trial. The actual services weren't going to be available until after trial was done. So why is that reasonable to condition that on this demonstration of sobriety?
If I could just do a two-part answer here. FKO is very factually different from our case here. And with respect to that parenting and psychological assessment, it is standard county practice to wait until there are 30 days of sobriety so that a parent can conduct engage in a parenting and psychological assessment that will be valid. If we do not have sobriety of a parent, we do not want them subjected to an invalid evaluation. That referral was made in July when the mother was in treatment, so we had to wait to show that mother had some sobriety or attempt to have some sobriety under her belt for us to make that referral for her to complete that psychological evaluation. That is common practice by the agency. We do not want there to be an invalid psychological evaluation. So we were working with the mother. We were continually working with the mother to try to work. And it does show that we were working with the mother and we're working towards reasonable efforts up until the time of the trial, literally up until and on the day of the trial, trying to accommodate mother, trying to offer transportation and services. I see my time is up. I ask this court to respectfully affirm the district court order in all respects. Thank you.
Thank you.
For the record, Ann Morris Carlson, for appellant Mother DAC, they were not offering services on the day of trial. They refused to accept a settlement on the record because they wanted mother to not only voluntarily terminate her parental rights but get arrested on an outstanding warrant. It's disingenuous to say that's a service that was offered for the purposes of reunification. Since they were insistent that we couldn't do the settlement conference on the record, we had the trial, and at that trial, they didn't meet their burden. They didn't meet their burden of proving that mother neglected her parental duties. You know, it took mother a week to respond to social services. Wonderful. In the scheme of the people that we are here to help in this system, we have on pages 12 through 16 of my brief a very detailed assessment, summation of the chronology that mother actually was asking for help all along the way. and then you say that she didn't respond for a week. This is someone that struggles with poverty. This is someone that struggles with instability. And we are using these things to hold against her and then not offering her the assistance that we are required by court order and statute, the purpose of the rules, to assist her so that she can care for her child.
I understand your argument. Where I am struggling is that ultimately, you know, we're not in the seat of the district court. And our inquiry here, especially when we're talking about the district court's findings, is whether the court was clearly erroneous in its findings and that it then abused its discretion. And in applying our clear error standard, a fact is clearly erroneous if it's not reasonably supported by the evidence as a whole. And we have to look at the evidence in the light most favorable to the district court findings. We can't find new facts. We don't get to reweigh credibility or try and reconcile conflicting evidence. So what basis in this record can you show us that the district court either clearly erred in its findings of fact such that it would constitute an abuse of discretion to reach the conclusion that reasonable efforts were made?
A proper TPR order includes detailed, specific, and sufficient findings to provide an appellate court with a meaningful opportunity to review MJL 582 Northwest 2nd, 585 at 588, Minnesota Court of Appeals 1998. Preferred practices for the district court to independently develop its own findings to reflect the court's independent assessment of the evidence in re TAA. The district court is not prohibited from adopting the proposed findings. So thus, the verbatim adoption of proposed findings does not itself compel a reversal. Peterson versus State, 649 Northwest 2nd, 161 Minnesota, 2002. This isn't an order where the court made these findings. This is an order that was signed by a judge who did not proceed over the trial. And I understand she didn't show up for the trial. My appellate brief is roughly the same brief that I submitted to the district court to argue that the agency did not make reasonable efforts. And I believe that having a signing judge sign that proposed TPR order the day it's submitted without reviewing any of the findings, although this court hasn't adopted a blanket rule against it, it does cast doubt as to whether or not the district court independently used its judgment when the district court didn't sign the order. I'm asking this court to reverse. I'm asking this court to find that the district court abused its discretion. The district court didn't even sign the order. I'm asking this court to find that the evidence provided at the default hearing is not sufficient to meet the agency's burden of proving that it made clear and that it proved by clear and convincing evidence.
And counsel, when you say, and I just want to flesh this out, when you're saying the district court didn't sign the order, what I hear you saying is that the judge who presided over the default hearing, who had the luxury of hearing the default testimony, didn't sign the order?
Go ahead.
Correct. The order wasn't signed by the judge who heard the trial. I don't even know if he reviewed the order. I mean, it was signed by the signing judge the day it got submitted. And this was not a slam dunk case for the agency, despite counsel's assertion that it was. I actually think they didn't meet their burden. I actually think that. And I recognize there are some bad facts and that not showing up to trial was not ideal. But we wouldn't be here if they would have allowed the settlement to happen via Zoom. And since we are here, I am asking this court to find that they didn't meet their burden, to reverse the district court's finding that the agency made reasonable efforts, which I believe is required for two out of the three statutory bases pled. I believe it's required in the plain language of subparent 2, and I believe it's required in the plain language of what is now subparent 7, neglected and in foster care. I believe there's case law, TAA, that would say that you need to make reasonable efforts to address substance use disorder for palpable unfitness in the form of referring someone to treatment. But I'm asking this court to find that this case actually is very similar to FKO, that the agency unilaterally decided it wasn't worth their energy, and they did not meet their burden. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you to both of you. The case has been submitted. We will issue an order within the matter, within the time prescribed by statute. So as the next case, as we reset for the next case, we'll take a short recess just as another judge subs in, and then we'll turn to the next matter on the calendar. Thank you.